Hello, welcome to Bare Naked Politics. This is the podcast for people who want to keep up with the headlines, but who aren't necessarily experts. So maybe you don't live and breathe politics, you're not that familiar with all the jargon, but you still do want someone to just strip it all back and make sense of it for you. If that is the case for you, then you've come to the perfect place. I'm Julia Bell, and today I want to have a quickie. I'm going to try and keep it under 15-20 minutes to go through the by-election in Hartlepool. This is a big thing. I don't want you to miss it because it has massive consequences. So Hartlepool is a constituency in the northeast of England. It's voted Labour since its inception, and yet the Conservatives won the seat for the first time in its entire existence. So nearly 50 years of being loyal to one party all gone as of, well, yesterday, being Thursday the 6th of May. So we need to talk about that. And we need to talk about how it happened, but I think more importantly, what it means. Because if Hartlepool, as a sort of case study, is anything to go off in terms of the bigger picture of how all the other formerly loyal Labour seats are feeling, then Labour are in deep, deep trouble. Listen, before I go on, please make sure you've subscribed to this podcast or that you've clicked follow if you're listening on Spotify. It basically means you'll never miss an episode. It's completely free for you to do, and it really does help me out. So do that before we crack on. And now let's get this quickie going. Okay, so as you know by now, the 6th of May saw lots of different kinds of elections. Some people are calling it Super Thursday, because it's kind of like Super Tuesday in America, where lots of political things happen all at once. So if you hear that term, that's what it means. Because we saw so much happening, you know, the local councils were elected in England, we had Welsh and Scottish parliamentary elections, we had mayoral elections, and as I'm recording this, what time is it? 5:30 on Friday the 7th of May, the results are still trickling through. I will probably end up doing an episode about all of that stuff when we have a fuller picture. But none of that affected Westminster. So none of that has affected the House of Commons. All of our MPs who sit in the House of Commons, they've been sitting back and kind of watching the show, frankly, because they only had a general election really recently in 2019. We're not due another one until around 2024. So Thursday was all about local councillors, Scottish MSPs, Welsh MSs, mayors, that kind of thing. Except in Hartlepool. That was the exception. They had a by-election, which I'm sure you've heard that term before, but just in case, it's what happens when, for whatever reason, the incumbent MP leaves office and there is a vacancy. So that needs filling before the next general election. So it might be because the MP died, or it might be because they were forced to stand down amidst a sort of scandal, or it might be that they've chosen to walk away from the role. Whatever it is, if there's a vacancy, it needs filling, and in that event, you have a by-election. So in this instance, just in case you didn't know, the MP for Hartlepool, the reason that that vacancy happened was because he was called Mike Hill, he was a Labour MP. He was essentially forced to stand down from being an MP because he is in the middle of kind of allegations of sexual harassment. So they did the by-election, and the results led to this momentous Conservative victory, where Jill Mortimer is the name of the Conservative candidate. She got almost double the amount of votes that the Labour candidate got.
Gillian Wendy Mortimer, commonly known as Jill Mortimer, Conservative Party candidate, 15,529.
It's a truly historic result and a momentous day. Labour have taken people in Hartlepool for granted for too long. I heard this time and time again on the doorstep. People have had enough. And now, through this result, the people have spoken and they've made it clear it's time for change.
That was Jill Mortimer's voice there, the new Conservative MP for Hartlepool, and incidentally, the first woman ever to be an MP for Hartlepool. Now, by-elections, just in general, I think, are always kind of a big deal, because it's where one constituency, just one little random patch of the UK, sticks out like a sore thumb because they are having to elect an MP while all of the other MPs in all the other constituencies are safely in place. And so that one little patch becomes a kind of hub of political activity, and the parties all look at that seat as if it's this battleground. Because if they can win that, then the whole country will be watching, and that would be a really great kind of like a boost of momentum for that party. So it becomes like a golden egg. Everyone's hankering after it. And that premise of it being this really desirable thing is on crack when it comes to Hartlepool. That premise is supercharged because this is a constituency, like I said at the start, that had voted Labour every single election since the constituency was birthed in 1974. So you know how it's not that Hartlepool was invented in 1974, it's a very old town actually, but you know how the lines and the borders of constituencies sometimes change around and areas are renamed or whatever? That was the case for Hartlepool in 1974. But since then, it's always voted Labour. Now you might be thinking, Julia, why are we talking about this? Why is this such a big deal? But it's about the kind of constituency that Hartlepool is. This is Labour heartland territory. It's a kind of salt of the earth place, big swathe of working class voters. It's a northern port town in County Durham. It's got this strong history of trade unions. That profile on its own screams Labour. It's laughable to think of that as a Tory constituency, to be honest, just based on like every vote ever until now. But Brexit as a concept has really thrown a spanner in the works and kind of changed how these former Labour heartlands are defining themselves, because Hartlepool was a big time Brexit supporting area. 69.5%. So basically 70% of the voters in Hartlepool voted Leave in the 2016 EU referendum. That made it one of the highest Leave voting Labour seats in the UK altogether. So, you know, put yourself in the position of a Hartlepool voter. You've always voted Labour. It's like your bread and butter. You never even think about voting Tory. But then when the EU referendum comes around, you think, oh yes, I'm going to vote Brexit. And then in 2019, when Labour comes out and says, well, actually, we don't love Brexit and we're going to sit on the fence a little bit. Because you remember that Labour's policy was quite complicated. It was saying, right, we're going to offer you another referendum just to check that you're absolutely sure that this is a good idea. So we're going to negotiate our own version of a deal and you can choose between that or remaining a part of the EU. That concept that Labour came out with in 2019 just pissed people off in the likes of Hartlepool, who were, yes, loyally Labour, but also really loyally Brexit. And I think that just started to make the Tories look more and more inviting, because they had this very straightforward slogan in that 2019 election, didn't they? Get Brexit done. That was their slogan. So if you're a Hartlepool voter, you've always voted Labour, but you really want Brexit to happen, it confuses matters. Still though, in 2019, Hartlepool didn't vote Tory. They still voted Labour. So Labour got the seat, although only just. The margin was much smaller than in the past. And that's because lots of those Labour voters couldn't bear to vote Tory, couldn't bear to quite go to that length, but they did vote Brexit Party. Do you remember them? So enough people in Hartlepool were that kind of motivated to sort Brexit out and to have it happen that they were willing to vote for a single issue party, which is what the Brexit Party was. They've incidentally collapsed now. But yeah, 10,000 Hartlepool voters registered with the Brexit Party at the time. And I think watching that happen, the Tories were going, right, in this by-election, Hartlepool is ours for the taking. We can nick those former Brexit Party voters. We can cash in on the way that Labour has failed in the area. This is going to be a blockbuster fight because everyone's going to be watching and it's going to really help our image. Now, look, that's a really oversimplified explanation of how the Tories managed to knock Labour off the top post in Hartlepool. It can't all revolve around Brexit. I think that was a really big thing, but it's not the only thing. On a more general level, Hartlepool is just definitely one of those constituencies that's been neglected. And I'm not just talking about Labour. It's actually been majority Tory governments for the past, 10 years? It's been only Tories in charge. I think they've been neglected by every government for the past few decades. You know, they've had promises for big hospitals to be built, promises for the high street to be supported, because the high street in Hartlepool is dying. You know, you've got empty hotels, empty shop fronts, places that need a boost. And none of these promises have been fulfilled by anybody. Any of these, I think there's like a, I think this is reflected across the country, to be honest, but there's this total lack of confidence in anything that any politician says in an area like Hartlepool. So that will have played a huge part as well, right? Because if you voted one way this whole time, if you voted Labour this whole time and still nothing's happened in your area, there's probably an element of, right, this isn't working. None of the other parties have a chance of getting in, so there's no point voting like Lib Dem or Green. Let's just give the other guys, let's give these Tories a go. What's the worst that could happen? So I think that's another thing that will have made an impact. And then actually, a big thing that the Tories talk about a lot at the moment is this idea of levelling up. I don't know if you've heard Boris Johnson refer to this levelling up agenda. And that is referring to this idea that we should level up the country and get rid of regional inequality. So it's basically trying to address the fact that Northerners have, I was going to list things, but it's shitter everything. I was going to say shitter transport links, shitter job opportunities, dying high streets, but pretty much anything you can name in the likes of these northern towns is probably worse than in their southern counterparts. Obviously, it's not always that simple. It's not just a straight north-south divide. There's definitely places in the south that struggle. And of course, there's areas in the Midlands that are really impoverished as well compared to, say, central London. But coming from a northerner myself, you know, I grew up in an area where it was literally one bus into Leeds every hour and a half from my street. You know, I can see where this policy came from. You know, we need to level up the transport in Leeds compared to how it is in London, because here there's about 50 different transport links from where I live. So it's, yeah, I can see why the Tories thought, this is how we attract particularly northerners and people in kind of neglected areas, is if we make them promises that things are going to get better for them and they're going to start to at least resemble the attention that the South gets. By the way, that's not me saying that the Tories are definitely going to fulfil that promise. And I think there's plenty of people who still hold a lot of contempt for the Tories in the North, because towns like Hartlepool and those kind of working class areas, in essence, suffered the most under Tory policies over the last 10 years. You know, David Cameron brought in austerity, which is basically a fancy word for we're not going to spend any money, we're going to make lots of cuts because we need to get our national debt under control. So we're going to basically be very, very frugal. And northern towns really, really felt that in a way the worst. So I think a lot of people will look at this whole levelling up thing really cynically and say, oh, it's just a load of politics nonsense. They're just trying to attract northern voters, but they're not planning to follow through. Only time will tell. But it absolutely is a policy that Boris Johnson has been pushing very hard. He may well follow through on it. He may not. It's up to you to decide on that. I'm just thinking through things that may well have appealed to voters in Hartlepool. Along with asking how this happened, we really ought to be asking what this means, specifically for Labour, but also for the state of party politics in the UK altogether. Because if Labour are losing their heartland seats to the Tories, and they're not just losing by a bit, Jill Mortimer, the Tory candidate, got 15,500 votes next to Labour, who got 8,500. She won by double, right? If this is happening in the supposedly safe Labour seats, how the hell are Labour ever going to get back into government? How is that ever going to be possible? And to be honest, this isn't just a question you should be concerned about if you're a Labour supporter. I mean, if you are a Labour supporter, I imagine today is like a really sad day for you. But even if you're a diehard Tory, don't you want your government to feel like they've got somebody offering a strong opposition, somebody breathing down their neck and consistently holding them to account? That kind of voice in the back of their head that's saying, as soon as you cock up, I'm going to take your place. That kind of accountability, because this is a democracy, after all. And so by design, the leader should feel like the minute they make an unforgivable mistake, the public will boot them out the door and replace them. And is that really happening if Labour can't even hold on to the seats that should really be safely theirs? Now, like I said, this is just one patch of the UK. It's a very interesting case study, but it's got all the party leaders and all the big personalities within Labour pointing fingers at each other. You know, they're all blaming each other like there's absolutely no tomorrow. So Diane Abbott, really famous personality within Labour, she's pointing her finger firmly at Keir Starmer, the leader of the Labour Party. Because remember, Diane Abbott is a big old pal of Jeremy Corbyn, who's Keir Starmer's predecessor. He used to be the leader of the Labour Party, but they have this rivalry, don't they? Because Starmer booted Corbyn out of the party amidst the sort of anti-Semitism scandal. So Jeremy Corbyn actually isn't a Labour Party MP. He's having to be an independent MP because of Starmer booting him out. So Diane Abbott has got Jeremy Corbyn's back, and she's still clearly, you know, her alliance still clearly lies with him, because she tweeted, this is a quote, "Crushing defeat for Labour in Hartlepool. Not possible to blame Jeremy Corbyn for this result. Labour won the seat twice under his leadership. Keir Starmer must think again about his strategy." So that's the Corbyn camp's view of it. This is all Keir Starmer's fault. But then you've got Labour personalities who are more centrist. So they represent a different faction within Labour. So, you know, you've got the Jeremy Corbyn camp, even though Jeremy Corbyn isn't a Labour MP anymore. He still is the kind of head of this camp in a weird way. And they are definitely more left-wing. They appeal to, like, the traditional trade unions. They also appeal to the kind of radical, young, they're called Momentum, the Momentum movement within Labour. But then you've got the folks who prefer the approach of, like, Tony Blair. So the more centrist approach that isn't as left-wing and tries to appeal to, like, more conservative voters in a way. A key example of one of those is the former MP for Hartlepool itself, Peter Mandelson. So he actually used to be the MP for Hartlepool. He used to be big in Tony Blair's government. You probably recognise his name. And he's pointing the finger at, what do you know, Jeremy Corbyn. So his theory is directly opposite to Diane Abbott's, because he went on the Today programme on Radio 4 and he said that the loss was down to the two C's, COVID and Corbyn. Yeah, his philosophy is that Corbyn is, quote, "still casting a very dark cloud over Labour." These two complete, I mean, they literally couldn't be more opposite, these theories for why Hartlepool went to the Tories. One thing is for sure, if Labour can't work out what's gone on and can't unpack how they made this total cock-up, then how are they going to unite behind a strategy? How are they going to have any success moving forward if they can't even agree on what's gone wrong? And you might be thinking, what about the leader? What does Keir Starmer actually think? Well, let's have a listen.
Well, I'm bitterly disappointed in the results. And, you know, I take full responsibility for the results, and I will take full responsibility for fixing things. We have changed as a party, but we haven't set out a strong enough case to the country. Very often we've been talking to ourselves instead of to the country, and we've lost the trust of working people, particularly in places like Hartlepool. I intend to do whatever is necessary to fix that.
What will you do? Because some people in your party are going to say you need to move more towards the Jeremy Corbyn agenda, others away from it.
This is not a question of left or right. It's a question of whether we're facing the country. We have changed as a party, but we've not made a strong enough case to the country. We've lost that connection, that trust, and I intend to rebuild that and do whatever is necessary to rebuild that trust.
So that was Keir Starmer talking to a reporter actually minutes before I started recording this on Friday the 7th of May. And we're getting from him full responsibility. I take full responsibility, but we're not getting a specific plan of action. He's not outlining specific promises or policies. And I think one of his biggest tasks is going to be walking this tightrope between the very separate factions of his party and trying desperately to keep them all happy at once, keep them all united. And that was actually one of his biggest pledges when he vied for the leadership role, when he wanted to become leader of the Labour Party. He said, my thing is I'm going to unite everyone, but it appears he's not been successful at that so far. And even moving forward, how the hell is he going to do that when they're so discordant? They don't get on at all. How are you going to come up with anything specific without alienating one side or the other? Now, I'm not saying it's impossible for Labour to come back fighting. If Tony Blair's election in 1997 can show us anything, it's that Labour can and has successfully reinvented itself and completely inspired the British public. There was nothing quite like that election for, like, people getting unbelievably excited about the Labour Party. But Boris Johnson didn't exist in 1997, politically anyway. He didn't have the hold over the British public in the same way that he does now. And this vaccine rollout success, plus Boris Johnson's kind of weird ability to avoid taking any responsibility for any mistakes that he may have made throughout this pandemic, I think the Labour Party have a barrage of obstacles to overcome before they can have anything like the success that Labour had in the late 90s. But anyway, what do you think? I love to hear from you. Get in touch on social media. Maybe you think I'm being too harsh and maybe this Hartlepool thing was a bit of a red herring and actually that red wall, that Labour heartland is going to come back to Labour and this is just a blip. Or maybe you think actually, oh my God, Labour have got a hell of a mountain to climb. I want to hear from you. You can also get in touch on social media. I can't remember if I said it, at @JuliaBell_X. You can reach out with suggestions for future episodes if you want me to talk about something in particular. I will ask that you do it nicely. A please and a thank you never went amiss. Just barking at me in capitals what I ought to do in a podcast and that I should be ashamed that I haven't done a podcast on this, that and the other. It's never likely to get you a reply, much less an entire podcast episode. But the vast majority of you, I want to thank you so much for your support and your kind words. I really hope that this podcast is helpful. If you think it is and you want to keep it going, the best thing you can do is become a patron. You essentially buy me a coffee every month. It leaves you safe in the knowledge that I can keep doing these. So the link is in the episode description for that. I will speak to you in the next one. Thank you so much for listening. Goodbye.